Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
That song can mean one thing. You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Jeff Martin alongside my tag team partner and one half of the Jersey Wrecking Crew, the Trendsetter.
Thank you, Tiffany Oshansky.
Brian Berga, thanks a lot, man, for joining us, as you always do. And, man, crazy, crazy week. Man, we are beat, but we want to give you this great show. Lots to talk about. Clash of Champions preview. We'll do a little bit of Raw and SmackDown recap. Who's actually winning the war between Raw and SmackDown? And when I do that, I use air quotes with the war because, you know, it is under the same brand, but
you
still,
love your,
you know,
air quotes,
the brand
man.
Split. And of course, we also have Peter Wolfinger. He will join us. He's our guest this week. Looking forward to talk to him. Lots to talk to him about. And very interesting character, as you'll hear a little bit later on. But first and foremost, Bri, Clash of Champions really has a lot to live up to because Backlash, the first pay-per-view sole SmackDown brand show, really did a great job in a lot of things as far as character development, investing in the character, and the matches were pretty darn good as well.
It definitely were, and thank you, my tag team partner, for tagging me in on that one, because Raw has a lot to live up to right now. The bar has been set. You know, I was kind of for Backlash in terms of a pay-per-view for the first individual one for SmackDown Live. But all in all, I love the storylines that went into it because it made sense. Every single match that was on that card, whether you liked it or you didn't, or you cared about the outcome or the way it was booked, it told a story and we were invested into it. And now my biggest pet peeve is that Raw, looking at this formula of what SmackDown Live's done for a three-hour show, has not done the same thing. I look at the undercard for Clash of Champions, which is the first independent pay-per-view for the Raw brand, and I mean, you have your main matches there. You have the Universal Championship match. You got the tag team titles, which I feel hasn't really been promoted. We talk about Gallows and Anderson till the cows come home of how they're being used improperly in the New Day, again, kind of older shtick. And the WWE Raw Women's Championship and Triple Threat match again. So we can all have our gripes on that. But the undercard for the United States Championship, I mean, you were just throwing Roman Reigns in there. So for, we have to be invested in the fact that we knew they had a rivalry prior, kind of got squashed at SummerSlam, got put aside, and then 2 weeks went by, or 3 weeks went by, and now we're back investing in this again. I'm sorry, you can't do that. This has been a problem they've been doing right now with Roman Reigns. And again, everybody's listening to this saying, oh, Brian's picking on Roman Reigns again. No. I'm not picking on Roman Reigns himself, personally. I'm picking at the fact how creative, and I'll use air quotes when I mention creative, is using Roman Reigns. First of all, you take him away from the main event status, main event picture, I'm sorry. The perfect thing you can do right now because the fans are booing him out of the building everywhere he goes, except if you go to house shows. And now he's away a little bit. You're giving him some momentum now. Crowd's actually getting behind him in his rivalry with Rusev prior to SummerSlam, going into SummerSlam as well. And you put him back in the main event hunt. You can't do that. By doing that, you're kind of telling the audience, you know what? We don't care what you're invested in. We're just going to flip-flop and fill in holes where they need to be, and that's just the wrong way to do it right now. Storylines are so important right now because, first of all, you need to be invested and it has to feel real. Roman Reigns right now and what he's doing and what creative's doing is making this card right now for Clash of Champions not worth watching, in my opinion.
Yeah, you talk about real, too, and I think what Backlash, I think what SmackDown's been doing a lot better recently, and I think where they've got the edge on Raw is it just seems more real. I mean, we'll get into the whole Dean Ambrose-John Cena rivalry, which took another turn as Dean Ambrose gets a clean win over the face that runs the place. You could say the former face that runs the place,
exactly,
in John Cena.
Exactly, I was about to correct you there.
And, you know, Dean Ambrose had a great promo afterward on Talking Smack, which has become must-see, and I think he does a good job enhancing to the you know, the wrestlers and gives them a good chance to do their promos and work on their mic skills and just makes an impact. So to me, honestly, though, I think it just, to me, like you said, you can't invest in this when the storylines are so shoddy and when it's
scattered
like,
all over the
and
place.
And it seems like they recycle the same thing. You said a triple match for the women's championship. I mean, we can see two women's matches. And what I like SmackDown's doing is that they're teasing a Carmella versus Nikki Bella match and no DQ match. You can have two matches, and it wouldn't be a bad thing, you know? So, to me, we don't need to see a triple threat match. We get it. We know that these are the three top females on the Raw brand. But, I mean, you can set it up differently. They could have done a better job booking that, where just a one-on-one, where just Sasha and Charlotte. You don't need to get Becky, you don't need to get Bayley, you know, in there right away, you know, make it a slow build process.
I mean, Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley would talk about constantly how, you know, storylines are going to go a little bit longer. We're going to have the slow build. That hasn't happened for a good amount of time, Jeff. And I don't know about you. You mentioned it before about, you know, do we need another triple threat match? I'm personally tired of triple threat matches. It used to be something that was special. Whenever you would see a triple threat match in any scenario, whether
it meant something.
Whatever title or whatever storyline you're doing, it meant something, like you said. Because it was used so sparingly, it was special. Same thing with cage matches, you know, Hell in a Cell matches. Now it seems like they're the norm now.
You know, let's talk about Roman Reigns, right? Through no fault of his own.
We have to talk about Roman Reigns here.
Well, because you brought it up in the beginning, and I wanted to throw my two cents in there. You said it's no fault of his own, and I agree with you. I mean, he was suspended for the first time with a wellness policy, so, you know, he took umbrage with that. I guess he took blame for that. He manned up on it.
Yeah.
And so it looked like the push was going to be, you know, when Finn Balor was there, I guess he was going to be de-pushed. He was going to get maybe at a certain level and then maybe fight for a secondary title. But now what happens is that now it seems like WWE just can't help themselves. They got to put him in the main event somehow. They got to have him beat Kevin Owens clean in his cage match, where it doesn't help Kevin Owens whatsoever. And first, just the sense of putting Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens in a steel cage match right before Clash of Champions, or where Kevin Owens has to defend it with Seth Rollins, just makes no sense. So once you watch Raw, you shake your head. When you watch Tuesday nights and you watch SmackDown Live, you're like, okay. Basic, simple storylines, matches, and, you know, they do the promos, and, you know, the announcers help you with the background, and you're like, okay. You know, it's simple, it's basic, but when you get to Raw, and you're like, man, it just doesn't make sense. You're leaving... After watching that show, shaking your head.
Yeah, and getting pretty emotional about that, too. And why wouldn't you? Because
I didn't want to cry, though. I don't think I was going to cry.
No, still, no, you're just getting frustrated, and it's understandable when you look at it right now. Again, I'll mention one more thing, and we'll get off topic of Roman Reigns, because I feel right now he's a detriment to himself, and more importantly, creative is a detriment to Roman
Reigns. That's what it is. Creative is a detriment to Roman Reigns.
Yes.
Roman Reigns can only be dealt the hand he's given.
Exactly, but again, at the same time, when you're being dealt the hand you're given, you have to make something out of it. In my opinion, Roman, you know, although he's improved in the ring by far from when I first saw him, his ability to connect with the audience is still the same way, and it hasn't improved at all. But that being said, though, we're talking about creative and talking about this is my biggest gripe. We have Roman Reigns, right, working his way in and out of the main event. Okay, you want to do that? It's fine. What really angers me, Jeff, is that we have a main event at Clash of Champions on Sunday between two legit badasses. Guys that can go and guys can steal a show every single night.
They're going to tear the house down.
Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. Yes, they're going to tear their house down. But what upsets me more is that all the attention's been taken away from them. It should really just be about Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins and their interactions with each other. By mixing in Roman Reigns, and again, I'm not blaming Roman, what creative has done now, it's taken the attention away from them. The whole focal point should be about the main event, about these two guys going at it and how much history they've had in the business, how much they've accomplished in the business, and the real gripe of why these two angry and fight with each other. Because right now, the only way I can understand is that Seth Rollins is upset with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, and Kevin Owens is just piggybacking off of that because he was handed the title by Triple H. So there's no real beef between the two of them. There's no personal animosity between the two except the fact that Seth Rollins feels he got cheated and Kevin Owens is basking in Seth Rollins' misery. That doesn't sell a pay-per-view for me. That doesn't make this an historic event, which it should be.
And the real beef is really Seth and Triple H, which we haven't seen Triple H since that night where Kevin Owens won the Universal title, right? And then we see, if I say it right a lot, it's because I've been watching a lot of Daniel Bryan, too, by the way. Let's just get that out of the way, too. But
you got to break that habit.
I'm going to have to break that habit, too, right? But anyways, so, you know, Kevin Owens gets, I would say, help from Triple H, you would say so. I think it's a little push from Triple H to get the title, and then he's gone. He's missing. You see him on the CWC. You see him, you know, focus heavily on NXT, and you're like, what's going on? You know,
so
and
it's then, not like he's off TV.
No, and he's taking pictures, and you know, there's supposed to be some conflict, and this is where you say the boundaries of real life and stuff. You know, let's. For those you don't know, about 4 weeks ago, Triple H and Stephanie bought a dog. They bought a pet dog. And on Instagram, they actually show them, you know, with the dog, a very cute puppy. And now it's turned into this, you know, big dog. You see Triple H holding it. So obviously they're together. And you never think, huh, how are they hanging out together when there's a conflict between them? And you're wondering, okay, you're not going to bring up what happened, you know, for the Universal title when you cost Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns the championship. So, I mean.
See, I don't have a beef with that as much as you do. Just because I think kayfabe's been broken for the longest time, so I can understand that. But the mere fact that nobody's addressing it on Raw, on WTV during the Raw shows, that's what upsets me. Because he's on NXT. He's on the Cruiserweight Classic. Can we hear something from him? Can we hear a formal statement made from him?
It bothers me in the sense of that angle. I mean, I get, you know, the kayfabe, it's broken. You see everyone together. But as far as this angle, which I think can be important, it's going to lead to something, you would like to see them, you know, listen, just don't take the pictures, you know? Just I'm not saying, you know, I'm wondering if there's really a animosity. No, there's no animosity. But I'm just saying, don't take that picture, you know, because, you know, the person's like, well, you know, storyline-wise, then, you know, this is whatever. When it comes to this angle, though, it's a little upsetting.
I don't want this to take away from the main event between two guys going at it. I mean, even if Seth Rollins loses clean, I can live with that because Seth Rollins has unfinished business with his main priority, which is right now isn't a championship, which is great for Seth Rollins because now it gives other people opportunities to fight for that title and to work storylines with Kevin Owens and not take Seth away a little bit fighting the Authority, which he was, you know, in cahoots with. You know, almost less than a year ago.
Yeah, and if you think that Roman Reigns is actually going to take the title from Rusev, then kind of eliminates Roman Reigns from the picture of challenging Kevin Owens. And also, too, even if he did and he's the next guy up, well, he already beat Kevin Owens clean in a cage match. How can you push that Kevin Owens has a chance to actually beat Roman Reigns? So to me, again, storyline continuity, to me, it just doesn't make sense. There's no really rhyme or reason why that steel cage match was made, and it kind of makes Mick Foley look, you know, late incompetent. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, believe me, I'm creating my own list here, just like Chris Jericho of all
the
mistakes.
How great was that segment, man?
Oh, it was amazing. But again, so true. I'm making a list here too of all the issues that I'm having with Mick Foley. Yeah, and believe me, I'll read my list once Clash of Champions is over to see how all this plays itself out. But again, talking about another gripe that I have, we spoke about triple threat matches, Jeff. But to me now. We talked about how Roman Reigns and Triple H might be taken away from a great match and the main important thing, which is the title between Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. Another thing that's being taken away from a women's division that, you know, had a lot of momentum going, I feel is kind of continually week after week, especially watching Raw, has lost a little steam in itself, is Charlotte and Sasha. This is supposed to be an angle, in my opinion, that was going to be very historic. It was going to be the equivalent, in my Jeff opinion, of Trish Stratus, Lita. We're going to watch this on the WWE Network years after this to see what a great rivalry it was, including Bayley in this.
It's fizzled, man, in my
opinion. It's fizzled. Because as much as I love Bayley, and Bayley was possibly filling in for the fact that Sasha was injured and had to deal with injuries, but now you've kind of screwed Bayley in a way because she's already beaten the champ. But now she's lost to the number one contender in Sasha Banks. And this triple threat match, I don't really see Bayley walking away with the title. And hey, I've been wrong before, and the WWE likes to surprise us. But right now, what do you do with Bayley is the biggest deal. We always worried about when is she coming up. Now, what do you do with her is the question.
I'm telling you, man, like we were talking and discussing tons of times. You need to have that slow build, that slow chase for Bayley. You didn't need to interject her right away. I guess you make a good point where they didn't know if Sasha was able to compete. But still, though, have Bayley take on Dana Brooke again. Have Bayley wait or have Bayley be a guest referee. Have a slow build. No need to have a triple threat match. And again, it said you lose the meaning of a triple threat match. It just doesn't become important. It used to be a special thing, a special event. But if you're going to have triple threat match, you know what I mean? And especially No Mercy, where you're going to have AJ, Dean, and John Cena, I mean, you don't need a triple threat match all the time. Plus, it adds depth, and it adds somebody else to rival with somebody else. You can't have just one storyline with the Divas. Oh, I apologize.
Wow.
Shame on me. Slapping my wrist with the women on the Raw side. I know you're going to have Nia Jax and Alicia Fox, but still, though, you can't have Bayley, you know, and Nia Jax, you know, rekindle their feud, something like that. You don't need a triple threat match.
I mean, maybe it was apropos, Jeff, because you're talking about Diva, and that's the way Charlotte's been acting as of late. Her character is a diva, believing in all this hype. And again, I know she's trying to figure herself out, and I think in the ring, Charlotte is amazing. I still think she's trying to figure herself out as a character. And right now, this direction she's going, because, hey, I can't gripe on Charlotte. This is great cheap heat that she's getting, making herself to be this obnoxious person. But again, her father wasn't like that. I'm not trying to compare Charlotte to her father. But again, if you want to be something different, you can't go down the same roads everybody else has traveled. So hopefully she figures that out eventually. This weird dynamic she's having with Dana Brooke. I mean, Dana Brooke now is literally nothing but a glorified jobber at this point. So at all, you would think there'd be this split in between, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. So for me, Sasha right now, here's the thing. They have all the talent in the world, Sasha, Charlotte, and Bayley. This biggest thing, the main point, folks, of what we're talking about during this whole segment is the fact that creative has no direction whatsoever. It's chaos, in my opinion, because nobody seems to want to make a decision.
You're making this whole dire situation here.
It is a dire situation,
like,
Jeff.
Chaos, dire.
Why wouldn't it be? If I'm Mick Foley and I'm Stephanie McMahon, I'd be panicking right now because right now there's no direction anybody's going. We don't know who's in charge. Is Stephanie really in charge? Is Mick Foley really in charge? Because we know in SmackDown Live, Daniel Bryan's running the show, although he asks permission from Shane McMahon. Here right now, they're just plugging holes. Listen. And expecting their first individual pay-per-view to be better than Backlash. Doesn't look that way on paper.
Talent-wise, it can be, just because they have more depth. But you make another great point in the fact where, you know what, when Shane or Daniel Bryan come out, there's a purpose, there's a reason. And on Raw, you just get them coming out for, you know, just filler, or whether it's just, you know, to set something up. I like the backstage segment with Foley and Jericho. That's classic. If I could get that for 2 hours and 15 minutes, that'd be great too. You know what I mean? I'd love to see Jericho and Mick Foley, you know, interact with one another. But like I said, you make a good point. When Daniel Bryan and when Shane McMahon come out, it's important. When Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley come out, it's way too much. And again, too, you know, like you said, I don't know if it's dire, but you know what? They need to right the ship because it's slowly and slipping away, especially Monday Night Football, which has started, and it's taking away the ratings. You look at the ratings now, 2.6, 2.5, 2.7. It's not at the threes anymore. You know, you're going to have this. And with SmackDown breathing down their neck and getting like a 2.4, 2.3 rating, you know, it's a little bit closer this war. And what does it say when you have a roster that's half of the roster on Raw and it's really literally the must watch one? There's an issue there. It really is.
And not only does Clash of Champions has a lot to live up to compared to Backlash, but what lived up to the hype, folks, which felt like the NCAA tournament. I had my brackets out with Jeff when I was just scratching them out every single time because what do I know about wrestling, right? The Cruiserweight Classic finally crowned a new, I wouldn't say first time ever, but new Cruiserweight champion in TJ Perkins. And what a great match that was with Grand Metalik. I could have seen it going the other way around, but now the Cruiserweights will be exclusive to the Raw brand. Man, if you're SmackDown Live, you're kicking yourself. Like, what do I have to do to get something like that? Because I thought
Another hour,
right? But I thought the Cruiserweights would have been great on SmackDown Live. And on Raw, we saw the Cruiserweights and the return of one of my favorites right now, the Brian Kendrick, to find out who would be the number one contender at Clash of Champions.
Do you think with Cedric Alexander, Richard Swann, and Grand Metalik, do you think that maybe Vince McMahon was thinking, well, I don't know these guys, but maybe I know the Brian Kendrick, so I can put him in the match with TJ Perkins? Because to me, I love the Brian Kendrick, but I would love to have seen Cedric Alexander take on TJ Perkins at Night of Champions for the Cruiserweight Championship.
I agree, but again, you understand why they did it, though. You need a great veteran in there to help solidify this in a way, because you said they're unknown. A lot of them are unknown, except Brian Kendrick, which a lot of people might know back from the Attitude Era, or post-Attitude Era. So I think it's the right move to make. I see your point, but at the same time, maybe the Cruiserweights do benefit from an extra hour. Maybe they can use an extra hour up for Cruiserweights. I think they're more prone to SmackDown Live and the way they like to set up things, because I think their identity will be well known. They'll be more, I hate to use the word protected, but they'll be used
more hyped, maybe
more correctly. Yeah. They'll be used in the proper way where you're seeing who they are as personalities, but more importantly, their craft in the ring. So to me, it's interesting what's going to happen at Clash of Champions, but like I said, that's another thing too where I'm excited to see the match, but it really hasn't been built up. So what do I look forward to? I'm just kind of putting my arms up in the air hoping for the best.
How about no TJ Perkins on the first night of the Cruiserweights on Raw?
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Right? I mean, like, what's going on there? And the only...
Why would I want my champion on Raw? Yeah.
Listen, I like the entrances. I think they got a great amount of time for the entrances. I think that it was big time. I had an issue with Mick Foley reading their names off a little piece of paper.
That's just Mick Foley's attempt to always want to get more airtime.
You know what? I just feel like, you know what? If you don't even know them, I mean, how can you possibly have us... you know, feel invested into it. I think that, man, you know, either memorize it or put their face on the Titantron and then, you know, put a little description on them, put the names and stuff, because honestly, I was not a big fan of that. It makes it look like it's not important that you need to put on just a piece of paper. So I was not a fan of that. But the wrestling, I mean, wow. I mean, these guys really busted their butts and really impressed. I think the crowd...
which is what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, and the crowd was somewhat into it. You know, you got to give it up to these guys. These guys, I don't know why it got over in WCW and it's taking, at least for the first time that I saw, the crowd to invest. But, you know... you don't know these guys, but these guys are amazing. Look at what they did in the ring. Look at all the finishes. Look at all the maneuvers, all the counters. It was just amazing. And, you know, fans, get into it. Look them up. Google. It's instant gratification. Take your cell phone. Just Google. These guys are awesome. And I'm looking forward to, even though I was thinking maybe Cedric Alexander should have been in there, I'm looking forward to the Brian Kendrack and TJ Perkins. It'll be definitely one of the show stealers that night. Well, no excuse, too.
Well, the problem with Raw right now is not the fact that we've mentioned time and time again it's a three-hour show, Jeff, but they're competing against the NFL. Right now, it's football season, folks. Jeff and I have our fantasy lineups. We're checking them right now to make sure who we can add and drop. But they have that as their competition. SmackDown Live right now doesn't theoretically have any competition on Tuesday. But the main point that you brought up, too, that I want to just elaborate a little bit more is that you look at the dynamic between the two shows. Forget about the talent. Forget about how they're dissecting, how they're building up each hour. Look at the dynamic from the authority figure. You have this weird dynamic between Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon, where there's always a power struggle. Who's really in charge? You're standing over me, or you're using your power against me, vice versa. With SmackDown Live, you don't have that. We know Shane McMahon's in charge, but he gives full autonomy and authority to Daniel Bryan.
They're not the focal point.
They're not the focal point.
That's what it is.
They put themselves out there. Even Daniel Bryan's interactions with The Miz, which, you know, you thought they were going to separate them, doesn't seem to be working because they're always interacting with each other. And Miz is doing a great job now in terms of being that champion that's asking for demands, wants more in his contract. Again, bringing some of that realism. We'll talk more about John Cena and Dean Ambrose in just a second. But again, they're not the focal point. Stephanie and Mick Foley are always on Raw. The first opening segment of Raw, what is it? It's always Mick Foley or Stephanie McMahon in the ring. Why can't we just have a match to start off with? Is that too much to ask, Jeff? Am I being selfish here? And now you look at Dean Ambrose, and a lot of people are really high on Dean Ambrose. I like Dean Ambrose as a talent. I think he has that maniacal edge to him, which is cool, especially in a PG-13 era.
He has that maniacal for that era.
For that era.
Okay.
But in terms of, has he made the WWE World Championship, has he raised it to another level? I don't think so. And I think he's failed in that approach. Now, a lot of it could be
that's
with
a little
the
harsh.
Rock.
Failed? I think maybe he hasn't achieved it. But failed, don't you think he's a little strong?
Well, no. If you don't succeed in reach your goal, then what have you done? You've failed. Again, if we want to sugarcoat it and say, oh, you know, he gave it a good effort and, you know, Dean Ambrose worked really, really hard. Yes. Take nothing away from Dean Ambrose, but when your ultimate goal was to make that title more important than this new title that came in,
I don't think
Dean Ambrose did that.
I think he did it at Battleground. I think that win solidified his reign. I don't think was it successful, maybe in the long run, as far as holding it longer, maybe. But I think, though, he did make, to me, honestly, that title is more important than the Universal title in my eyes.
Well, here's the difference. I mean, we're going all the way back to Battleground now, right? We're not even talking about SummerSlam with Dolph Ziggler, right? Although that was a good storyline, and I was interested to see what happened. But look at Battleground. You said that solidified him. So now you're telling me that the title solidified Dean Ambrose. When AJ Styles won it at Backlash, it wasn't like, finally, now AJ Styles can be taken seriously. It's, finally, he got what he deserved.
Yeah, but they must.
I don't think Dean Ambrose deserved it. He worked hard, but he needed that title at Money in the Bank, and to defeat Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins to solidify himself as a talent.
But you're talking about AJ Styles, right? AJ, oh man, right. This is gonna count how many times I say this. AJ Styles to me deserved it, but he hasn't solidified his title yet. He still needs to solidify it.
Yes, but he needs to. The title doesn't solidify him. The point I'm making here, Jeff, is that when Dean Ambrose won the title, everybody was excited. I was like, wow, they finally gave him the belt. Because the way he'd been booked and the way he's been presented and all the losses and wins, and you know, a lot of people talk about how wins and losses don't matter in pro wrestling, but sometimes they do, and I have to agree with Jeff on this, how you, the kind of light you're seen by the fans and how you're looked at and perceived. But that made Dean Ambrose, wow, now he's a main eventer. AJ Styles doesn't need the title to be a main eventer. He just needs to defend the title and beat Dean Ambrose and John Cena at No Mercy to solidify himself as a dominant champion.
Yeah, but that's to me, they could have done it that night, but they, for some reason, decided to have AJ Styles kick him in the nuts, and you know, who wouldn't kick somebody in the nuts to win the title?
But that was I was so angry with that, but it was the best thing that could have happened, I'll tell you why.
I don't think so, because you know what? With that match, it would have solidified him as a champion, because he just came off beating John Cena. And he's had a great run with, you know, when he had that matchup with Ziggler on SmackDown. He's had such a great run. Everything he does touches the gold. Him winning that title clean over Dean Ambrose, to me, would have solidified it that night. And now we need to see him solidify it in a triple threat match. To me, that night, honestly, even if he kicked them in the nuts, okay, I don't think they should have focused on it. And I think they did AJ Styles a disservice.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could debate about that. I think it's, I kind of agree with you to that point, too. But here's why I look back retrospectively about what happened. Look, what did Dean Ambrose do? Dean Ambrose had to attack Seth Rollins from behind, hit him with a briefcase, and then do the dirty deeds on him to win his first ever WWE world title, right? AJ Styles, what does he do? He beats John Cena clean at SummerSlam. Then what does he do? He beats Dean Ambrose in his own game. Because prior to that, Dean Ambrose was talking down to AJ Styles, and I was getting mad. I was like, who does Dean Ambrose think he is? Because if I was AJ Styles as the character, or I was behind stage, you know what? I'm gonna tell Dean Ambrose how it is. Because you know what? Instead of the whole, I'm the new face that runs the place, I'd be, you know what, Dean? You've been all over the world, but you know what? I've been a star way before you were. Because to me, Dean Ambrose, although he was very well known in the indie circuit, didn't become a star until he came to the WWE when he was part of The Shield. AJ Styles was a star before he ever came to the WWE. So he didn't need that to prove. So he doesn't need to prove to anybody that he's a star.
Not to you, but you're the WWE fan who doesn't know AJ Styles. Don't you think he needed that to solidify him as a champion? To you, because you know him from TNA. You know him from New Japan. But what about the casual wrestling fan that he still needs to solidify him, who's the WWE fan, who doesn't want to look at the other product or doesn't know him from anything else?
What I think he solidified himself when he defeated guys like John Cena and Chris Jericho, when he went up toe-to-toe with Roman Reigns and beat him twice, theoretically. I think he solidified himself in those matches and the type of caliber talent he is. In terms of character, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he needed that evolution to become well-known by the casual general WWE fan universe. But that being said, what I love so much and where I think WWE dropped the ball, though, is that Dean Ambrose is complaining that how I could take it if I lost clean to you, but you ended up kicking me in the groin, ended up taking the title away. I can't live with it. Now you're my enemy. What kind of a hypocrite is Dean Ambrose, right? Because here's the thing. He went to AJ Styles and said, you know what? This is a fight. I don't care that you're the best wrestler. I'm going to scratch and claw and do whatever I want, and this is my Dean Ambrose impression, to be a champion.
It is a hypocritical,
I
agree.
Is crying,
yeah,
for the fact
sounds
that
like
you
a whiner.
Beat me that way. Yeah, and then he's got the balls to say, using the word balls here, to say that to John Cena, oh, you know, you don't have what it takes anymore. Could be true, but
I like
you're,
that,
a part, you're a part-timer.
I like that. It's a very,
I've surpassed
it's a very
you.
Part-timer is a very phrase that John Cena dislikes.
Oh, yeah.
But the way John Cena getting him personal. I think it's personal.
Exactly.
If you saw Talking Smack, he said, I don't think he has it anymore. I think he's a snake. I think he comes up to you, whatever. And you know what? And Dean Ambrose is right, man. When they need a guy, when they need a star, Dean Ambrose is the guy they call. He says, I've done four main events. What people don't know is I've done four main events in the week. And John Cena, what's he done? One. So I think I like the edginess, and that's why SmackDown is very real, and I think it's really outshining Raw.
And here's where I think Dean Ambrose, again, that was a great promo, and I thought you saw his anger. You saw authenticity is what we see when we see SmackDown. As opposed to Raw, it's more just storyline, character-based, ha-ha-ha, jokes here and there. SmackDown Live's doing a great job in why they're winning this war, because it feels real. It feels off the cuff. But going just real quick back to Dean Ambrose in that segment, I think everything he said was great. He had a point. He had every right to say it, but here's the one thing that I'll say to Dean Ambrose. Even if we had him here, I'll say this to Dean Ambrose live, although we know how he is during podcast.
Yeah, he probably won't react to you.
Probably won't react to me, but I'll do my best to get a reaction out of him. I'll say to Dean, you know what? At the end of the day, as good as you think you are, this company will not fall apart without you. That's my only base gripe. Because he's like, this company will fall apart if it wasn't for me. No, no, no. Hogan left, it didn't fall apart. The Rock left, it didn't fall apart. Stone Cold Steve Austin retired, it didn't fall apart. This company will continue with or without you, Dean. So you know what? In that case, I can't agree with Dean Ambrose because he's not bigger. He's not that type of echelon. He's not the Shawn Michaels kind of guy where he can go out there and say, this company rests on me because I'm the showstopper. No. That's not Dean Ambrose,
Brian,
to me.
I'm a little confused here. You know it's just marking out. If you bought that and you're upset about that, then you bought it.
I'm just making a point, dude.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say.
Oh, my God. We're just dissecting things. You think I'm taking it personally? No.
No, not personally. But, you know, like, honestly, like, first, one thing is I believe that.
No, if I was a character, that's how I would attack him.
I believe that he should feel the place. He should feel like he is the man.
Yeah.
He's carried the company on its back with all the injuries, you know, too. So I think he's deserving, too, of some credit. But, hey, if the guy's doing
I would have loved to see Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles one more time. I don't think we should have added John Cena right then and there.
Another triple threat match. Why? It all comes back to the freaking triple threat match.
They're making it rain triple threat matches,
that used to be special. You might get it on the next paper. Well, you see No Mercy, but maybe the next time, too. So lots to talk about in the upcoming weeks. We've got NXT that we'll talk about. Lucha gets its season started, too. And we're
going to
get into that. And, of course, TNA, lots surrounding them and whether, you know, WWE is going to buy them or the video library.
Yeah,
so,
we get a chance to talk about that. We'll talk about the next show, yeah.
We'll talk about the next show. It's still developing news, too. We want to get it out there. But, of course, now we've got Peter Wolfinger, who, I tell you, man, we talked to him and
I was laughing the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Besides laughing and just the way he sees things in the world, and he's just like, man, just common sense. That's all we ask you to do is look at the world through common sense. Peter Wolfinger joins the High Spot podcast. A lot of stuff. We talked about Colin Kaepernick. We talked about politics because me and Brian are going to attack it. We want to get somebody else's perspective. So Peter Wolfinger, you can follow him on Twitter at Peter Wolfinger, on his Facebook page. Just click Peter Wolfinger, and also on the Instagram, all Peter Wolfinger, and
has great videos out there. I mean, if you guys,
hilarious. You gotta have a sense of humor. Okay,
yeah.
You gotta laugh.
If you don't have a sense of humor, you're not gonna get it. But Peter has a tremendous sense of humor. It doesn't seem like he takes himself too seriously in a good sense, but he does take the views that he has very seriously, and you'll hear that a lot during the interview.
Yeah. So here it is, our interview with Peter Wolfinger, and it starts now. All right, Brian, this one's going to be a good one. I have no doubt about it.
I can tell by the tone of your voice, it's going to be magical.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be glorious, actually. All right, so we're going to be joined here now by Mr. Wolfinger, Peter Wolfinger. How you doing, man? How's everything?
It's going good. How's everything with you guys?
Good, man. So, listen, came about you through Facebook, man. You're quite the talent there. So talk about what you did recently with your Kaepernick display of allegiance to Mr. Kaepernick.
You know what it is with that? I wasn't going to touch it. It was one of the things I wasn't going to touch. I'm like, I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to go near it. You know, as much as it angers me, I'm going to let it go. But then September 11th, the 15th anniversary happened. And what really pissed me off is I love football just like everybody else loves football, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there watching TV, and I see four Miami Dolphins players kneel down behind our men and women who served the country, and they are kneeling down during the national anthem during the 15th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and I lost it. Now, just for those that don't know, I was there during September 11th, and I worked in it. For a while afterwards. And it's one thing to protest something, and I get it, the police brutality. I understand where the protests are coming from, but there's a difference. There's a protest, and then there's disrespect. And it just was a sign of disrespect when I saw it, and I saw anger. When I saw that on the TV, I went nuts. I went nuts. I said, no, you know, the man, and the thing is, the man that started all of this has a crappy football career. Let's just face it. Okay, they put him on the bench. His career is dwindling. He's got to think of something fast. He's not worried about anybody being oppressed or beat up or killed by police. No. He's got to think fast of what he's got to do to get himself popular again, because his butt is walking out the door. They're handing him his walking papers, which I saw they did anyway. So that's my theory on why he did what he did, his real reasoning behind it. You know what I mean? So, you know what? I'm done with this dirtbag. After I saw this, he started this movement, which is baloney, because it's a disrespect to our men and women that serve the country. And not even that. People, you know, they say African-American. Well, not everybody that's black is from Africa. So let's just say, you know, black Americans. It's a spit in their face. Everybody from, you know, Martin Luther King to Malcolm X to Rosa Parks, these people did things to get this country where it is today. So when you don't stand for that anthem, you're spitting in their face as well. And this is what gets me so mad. And that's why today I said I had enough. I found his jersey for $10 off eBay. I bought it, and I burned rubber on it with my Jeep. And then I pissed on it, and then I lit it on fire. Because it's a spit in everybody's face in this country. You know, this country's not perfect. We know that. Going through the years and what it's been through, we know it's not perfect. But it is where it is today because of great women and men and people that fought to get it where it is. And when you don't stand for the anthem and you don't respect the flag, you're spitting in every one of their faces. And it is your constitutional right to do it. If you choose to disrespect it, it is your constitutional right to do it, just like it was my constitutional right to do what I did today. And those are my thoughts. I'm sorry, you know. I know some people get offended, some people don't, but it's just my beliefs.
You know what?
I mean, what are your thoughts on it, guys? Do you think I was out of line?
No, because it is your constitutional right. And I think what we do here is we throw around the word constitution and we not hide behind it, but we use it as an excuse more than a reason, you know? And for example, like you're talking about protesting. I have no issue with protests. I have no issue with that. I have no issue with organizing something for a common good. Rosa Parks sat in front of the bus. Martin Luther King organized a rally in Washington. You know, that to me is a form of protest. That is a form of making your point. But what saddens me is when I watch all of this is that the traditions here in America, like, for example, to me, the national anthem is like a tradition. It's like, you know, it's something that you're born to do and you do it. And it's tradition because of the men and women that served. And it's your country. There's other countries that die for their flag like we do. There's other countries here that when you hear that anthem, you tear up. To me, once we start losing traditions in this country, I think that's where we go off the path. And I think that's, to me, what I don't think anybody's talked about is the tradition of that anthem and what right. It means. You know
exactly.
What I mean? That's why, to me, that you find something else to do. You know,
if we turn into some of these other countries where there is no tradition, where there is nothing of that nature, you know, people are going to cry. They're going to cry. They're going to be like, no, I want it back. And it's going to be too late. It's going to be too late.
It's dwindling. It's dwindling. Like, it's like those things, like the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay. To me, I don't get offended if I grew up and they didn't say the word God and they put, you know, slap, 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 whatever as a word, you know, but when that, you have to remove that word out and it's so offensive and you have to, you know, you can't say the Pledge of Allegiance, which is a tradition, where you can't say the national anthem, where you can't, you know, show the proper respect and stand for a national anthem. You know, it's not just words; it's what we stand for. And you know, look at the soccer events, or when you see people crying for their country and everything, you know, that they would give to defend this country. You know, to me, it's just, I don't mind the protest. I understand people have their own beliefs, and that's what this country, why it's so great. But the people that have died and have given up, you know, so that we can have these beliefs, you know, that's where I take it personal, you know?
You're right. And I get it wholeheartedly. And it's just, like I said before, it's a respect thing. I don't know, man. It's, you know, these are coming from athletes and you know, it's not coming from people in the streets that have to work for a living. It's not coming from people who have to get up, no matter who's in political power, have to get up, pay their taxes, work in order to survive, in order to raise family. These are coming from athletes that are making millions and millions of dollars a year, and they're sitting there, and they're making these stands like, you know, I don't know. It just irritates me. It really does.
Not only that, I can tell. And to me, the thing is, what bothers me is, okay, they have the right to believe that. We can get upset about it, but what can we do? Just like you have your right to do what you did to the Kaepernick jersey. But what bothers me is that you're showing your opinion, and more people are getting offended by what you do, and they're going to call you immature than what's going on with the whole national anthem. And we can't judge that, but they can judge you for running over a freaking jersey. Or I've seen fans like burn the jersey, like, oh, that's so extreme. They're just burning a freaking jersey. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
it's not a big deal. I didn't think it was a big deal. But as you can see in the comment section of the video, I even welcome, and I have plenty of leftist friends, plenty, and they rip me to pieces, man. They tear me up, and I laugh. I crack up laughing. I'm like, yo, it's your constitutional right to tear. You read the comments. You see, we go back and forth, and they respect me just like I respect them. It's their opinions. It's their thoughts. I welcome it. Hey, you don't like what I'm doing? By all means, write it underneath there. Let me know. Tell me to my face. I This is what this country is great. This is what makes this country great. This isn't China. This isn't, you know, places where you truly are oppressed, like North Korea. You know, you speak your mind, man. I appreciate your input. Even if it's not what you don't like what I'm doing, I welcome it. It's, you know, call it what it is, but I actually enjoy reading it. You know, like I have a couple of friends that are really strict Bernie supporters and Hillary supporters, and you see in the comments they rip me to pieces, and I laugh. I sit there and say, yeah. Come up with something better. You know, and I don't have any hard feelings towards them. I never do. I don't have any hard feelings towards anybody.
Yeah, well, Peter, that's the one thing that's always seems to be the problem. It seems like everybody's so sensitive nowadays with everything. Everybody's worried about being politically correct. And then what you do with the Kaepernick jersey, I mean, here's the thing, right? Colin Kaepernick goes out and tries to go publicity and on the media and talks about how he's doing this for a cause, right? But ultimately, all I've been hearing is not necessarily about the issue that he wants to bring up, but the issue of should somebody have to stand up or sit down for the national anthem? Is it right or is it wrong? So it completely defeats the purpose of what he's theoretically protesting for, isn't it?
You're right. And you know what? You don't have to stand for the national anthem. You don't have to. And like I said, it's your...
You're right. You don't have to. That's what makes this country so great. You don't have to do that. If you go to any other country or a few, they would...
You do it out of respect.
Yeah, you do have respect.
You do it out of respect. Like, if I was in another country... All right, how about this? I was in another country. Let's say I was in Russia, and I was at a Russian sporting event. I was visiting even as a tourist, and I'm at a Russian sporting event. And I see everybody standing up for their national anthem. I'm going to stand. It's out of respect. I'm in a place where they respect their country. I'm going to respect it, too, even as a visitor. I am here. I'm going to stand. I'm going to respect it, whether I believe their beliefs or not. I am not going to sit down and disrespect millions of people in their own. I'm not going to do it. It's not cool, man. I'm going to stand up and respect their wishes just like they would respect mine. You know how many foreigners come here to this great nation and they visit here, and when a national anthem is played at sports, they stand up, and they're not even from this country. They stand up. They do not sit down. You look at Canadians, for example. Ask any Canadian. They come over here, they stand with our national anthem at every sporting event. At any time that national anthem is played, even during concerts, they stand up. You know what I mean? It's out of respect. There's a thing called respect, and it seems we're losing that respect tradition. Like I said, tradition. We're losing it. And if we lose that, we're in trouble, man. We're in big, big trouble. We're going to head for, like, third world status real quick. Real quick.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is I think we're already heading that direction anyway.
Oh, let me tell you, man, and people are going to be screaming that they want it back, and it's going to be too late.
They want it back.
Government's going to,
and they took it for granted.
Control everything. They're going to end up taking control of everything because you're offended by every little thing under the sun, so they're going to control everything, and you will do what they say and when they want you to say it. It's coming. It's coming. And the Civil War, unfortunately, is really, you know, people think that that's hype. It's baloney. No. It's now in the sights of reality. It's really coming. There are militia groups that are out there that I know firsthand just from even doing this social media crap that are out there preparing for it. I see it because everything got so big. Crazy, crazy stuff is going on out there in the horizon, and people don't even realize it. The government is waiting for an uprising. They didn't get it. I mean, I can get into all this conspiracy stuff. We'll sit here all night. But, what I'm trying to say is we need to keep tradition. We need to keep certain things going. When we start losing that and we start disrespecting that, this is our downfall. As a country, it's a downfall. You know, so many people suffered to get us where we are today. So many. And it's just the whole Colin Kaepernick. I call him Colin, by the way. It's Colin. I know it's Colin.
Nah, that's right. I call him Colin. Colin.
Well, I call Colin for a reason.
No, yeah, I'm saying keep do that. You don't have to be respect. Here's the thing. He doesn't want to respect the flag.
You know that I know how to say his name properly. I'm calling him Colin.
Oh, no, yeah, we know that.
All right. I just wanted to clarify, just so everybody knows. I'm calling him Colin for my own reason.
Yes, everybody listen to the Heisman podcast. Peter can read. He can pronounce it.
He can, yeah, exactly.
All right.
What?
Peter can.
What else is... Besides that, the whole after September 11th, we know that, you know, a bunch of athletes knelt, and we would have thought that at that time would be a time of respect, but you know what? It continues, so we'll move on from that. We've made it perfectly clear how our feelings are. It's tradition, and other stuff that's on your mind that's bothering you recently. Yeah, talk about the whole Facebook thing. Talk about, like, you went to jail for 7 days. That was quite interesting. What happened?
All right, yes, that's another thing that gets under my skin with Facebook. Now, Facebook is one of the largest social media networks that's out there. Everybody is on Facebook, everybody. You got to remember, every old person is on there, and most young people are starting to shy away from it and go to other sources, but they're still on there. It's one of the largest used social media sites. And what's happening is Facebook is manipulating you on what you want to watch and what they want you to hear and what they want you to see and what they and this is where it gets crazy. Now I was put in a 7-day Facebook jail, and I don't even know for what. I was allowed to see my Facebook. I was allowed to look at everybody's stuff, but I couldn't comment and I couldn't like anything. And you know what it made you feel like? It made you feel like a criminal. Like you did something so horrific. And I sat there and I was laughing. So I made this step-by-step production on Instagram, doing day one, day two, day three, just horsing around. It's fake. Like, you know, life goes on. Okay, Facebook, you put me in a Facebook jail for 7 days. Well, you know what? F you, man. Like, I don't need you. You're gone tomorrow. I'm fine. I'm happy. My life still lives. But they try to control and manipulate the public by what they want you to see now or what they want you to hear. Now, most of my stuff is picking on Hillary Clinton, whatever. I do it for jokes. It's funny, whatever. But there are people that work there at Facebook that are very leftist organized, so they don't like you. They're very discriminatory, let's say. If you put something that's pro-Trump, they're going to suppress it. Like, for instance, my Colin Kaepernick video I made today has well over 100 shares, but only 2,500 views. Where I have another video that's on there that only has 28 shares, but almost 30,000 views, and it's me shoving a pizza down my throat, or a bagel, or whatever the hell it is. Okay? So it's showing you right there that Facebook is very selective on what they want to put out there and what they don't. Now, people love the Kaepernick video. It's getting shared all over, but yet the views are repressed. They suppress it. It's the craziest thing. I mean, look at my wall. You will see what I'm talking about. There's a bacon, egg, and cheese video of me stuffing a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich down my throat. I got 400,000 views on it, but yet I got 200 shares. That's the same as the Kaepernick video, but it's got 2,500 views.
Hey, I'm all in agreement with you. I mean, not just Facebook, though, but I think all types of media right now, depending on what platform you decide to watch it on, they're all dictating basically what we need to see and what we need to watch and what's important. I mean, if you're pro-Trump, then they view you in a very negative light. If you're pro-Hillary, then you're in a very positive light. I personally loved when Jeff showed me the video of you with the Hillary Clinton doll, or the little thing that came in the plastic box, and you did your constitutional right to flush it down the toilet.
And
I couldn't imagine.
It too, and
yeah,
pee
and pee on it, of course. I mean, I think.
But did you see the Bernie one?
No, what would you do on that one?
Okay, what happened was, I'm going to tell you the story between the whole Bernie and Hillary thing.
Okay.
I was at a family's wedding, a cousin's wedding, and she has this boyfriend. I won't name his name, but I'm standing there, and he's in the middle of the dance floor towards the end of the wedding, and he's screaming and yelling, flipping out like a tough guy. This guy offends me. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, you talking about me? And I'm looking at my brother. My brother's like, I don't know. So I can walk up to him. I'm like, everything all right over here? He's like, yeah, you offend me. Your stuff on Facebook offends me. Oh, okay. And he's like, we're not going to fight, are we? I'm like, no, I'm at a family's wedding. I'd like to knock in right now, but I'm not going to. Like, what's going on? What are you offended about? Your stuff, your pro-Trump stuff, your stuff offends me. Okay, well, you're entitled to your opinion. That's cool. All right, whatever. So I find out his name. And I look it up on Facebook, and I see that he's a pro-Bernie Sanders supporter. Now, I'm not anti-Bernie, just so you guys know. I might be pro-Trump, but I'm not anti-Bernie. There's some things I agree with Bernie Sanders. But yeah. I saw this guy was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I went nuts. I started laughing. I said, now I got him. So I bought a Bernie Sanders doll, and I stuffed it down my pants and had it talking out my zipper.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious, man.
So I throw it over my shoulder, and I said, how do you like me now? Now you're really offended.
What did you agree about Bernie?
Listen.
When he wasn't talking to have your
He looks like Larry David? Is that?
Well, no. You know what it is for Bernie Sanders? Here's why I'm not pro-Bernie Sanders. I would have been. He talks a good game. My thing of Bernie Sanders is, you've been in the political arena for 25 years. Nobody's ever heard of you until you started running for president. What have you done? You've done nothing. So all this stuff that you're talking about now because you're running for president, how am I supposed to believe that when you've been in the political field for 25 years? I have no clue who the hell you are. What have you done? See, that's why I'm pro-Trump. He's not been in the political arena. He might be a little rough around the edges. He might be obnoxious. He might be this. He might be that. But he hasn't been spoiled yet by the political arena. I want to see what he's going to do. I'm curious to see what he's going to do because these other guys have been in the political arena for many, many years and have done absolutely nothing. Hillary Clinton was here in New York. What did she do? What did she do for anybody here besides raise our taxes beyond belief to the point we could barely live here? What has she done?
Yeah, nothing. That's the answer.
Everybody.
She has done nothing. Everybody talks about her experience, and when they're comparing, obviously, Trump and Hillary, they're like, oh, look at Hillary. She's had X amount of years in the political field, and Donald Trump, he's never even spent one day dealing with people on the political aspect
nothing.
Of Congress or dealing with, for example, international talks and stuff like that. But who cares that Hillary has so much experience? It's like, for example, I've been in the minor league system for 10 years, and there's this rookie that comes up, and he's been in there for only 6 months, and he gets called up. What's to say about me? That means 10 years I spent, and I couldn't do anything.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, what have these people done? What has Bernie Sanders done in 25 years being in the political ring? Show me something. Nobody can show me anything. Same thing with Hillary. Show me what Hillary's done her whole entire political career that's mind-blowing. Show me.
Why do you?
Nobody can show me anything.
Pete, you have no idea how many times I talk to people about that, and then we're discussing it, and then they're like, and their whole thing, their whole defense about it when they're for pro-Hillary, they're like, well, Hillary has a lot of experience, though. I'm like, but what's she done? And they can't answer me. And then they're like, Trump's just a businessman.
He's a businessman,
but he has some success.
I've seen women support Hillary.
I have a lot of experience watching porn and whacking off. Doesn't mean I'm an expert at it. Maybe
at this point you are. I don't know.
But I'm just saying, like, it's like, come on, man. The person's been in the job field. She's been in the job field for many, many years, just like Bernie Sanders. What have they done that's been so outstanding? Show me something. Nobody can show me. Nobody.
Peter, why do you think the youth were so pro-Bernie? What was he offering that the youth were just, like, going gog over this guy?
Free education. free education.
They know that's impossible, right?
I don't know if they know if it's impossible, but they seem to think he was going to be the Messiah that was going to part the Red Sea. He's going to come in here and give everybody free shit. Not going to happen. All right, you can't. We physically and we cannot do it. We cannot afford it. Okay, we can't. Especially when you have a president that's dumping billions and billions of dollars over into other countries. You can't do it. It's just, I don't know, man.
Yeah, you scratch your head just as much as we are right now. I mean, and looking into the fact that before you know it, it's going to be November. And I got to be honest with you, maybe a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I was really worried when you would look at the polls, right? And, like, I am stressing for the fact that I'm fearful that come November, it's going to be like a 20-minute thing and that's it. And it's all over. It's going to go to Hillary Clinton. But in terms of Trump right now,
She's got the fix. That's the thing.
Yeah.
She's got everything rigged. And if she gets in, there'll be some sort of civil war. There will be some backlash. Those militia groups will act up. I promise you. I already see that coming. They already know that it's rigged and they're watching. I mean, there's organizations that are out there. I was even asked to be one of them.
Really?
To watch certain things. Mm. Yes. And I refused. I said, no, I'm not going to join that. I'm sorry. You know, they're ready.
Do you see the same type of revolt happening if Trump wins the presidency?
No, I think if Trump wins the presidency, he's already leading. But, they're saying your vote doesn't count. And she's already winning because it's certain. And the funny thing is, like I said earlier, there's nobody on the Democratic side that I know is voting for Hillary. They have this new, what is it called? Hashtag Dem Out?
Yeah.
Hashtag Dem Out. Like, the Democrats are stepping out. They're not even voting. Because Bernie got, threatened or whatever it was through the Hillary campaign to back up. But now I see Hillary pulling a six shit. Ooh, am I allowed to
come? Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so she's pulling a sick crap. And which I think is a delay, because what's going to happen is she's going to have to fall out of the election, and it's going to cause a delay, and they're going to say, okay, we have to postpone the election, so Obama gets to stay in longer.
Oh, God. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine?
Listen, guys, you heard it here first. I'm watching this fall down, and I'm watching all this crap, and I make jokes about Hillary doing the wobbly and all this other crap, but look at it good. You don't see her, do you? Do you see her after this whole wobbly thing on September 11th?
No.
The person that came out outside of Chelsea's apartment was not Hillary Clinton. If you look closely, it's not her. It's a body double. Look good. I want you to look really, really good. It's a body double.
Yeah, we've seen that where they've shown it doesn't look exactly like her, but it's like it is her. But you can tell the difference between Hillary and her body double. It's clear as day.
Yes, and if you look at that woman's teeth that came outside Chelsea's apartment, just look at the teeth. Those aren't Hillary's teeth. I look good. I went through the video twice, three times. It's not Hillary. So where is Hillary right now?
You talk about things also on a national level, but talk about things going on from your neck of the woods in Long Island. Talk about some of the stuff, too, that you also cover on your Facebook page, too, because that's also definitely of importance.
Well, you like that, right? I get very, very involved locally. And Stephen Ruth, do you know who Stephen Ruth is? The Red Light Robin Hood. Do you guys know who he is?
No.
I can't say that I do.
Enlighten us, Peter.
Okay, he's the guy that went around and he was pushing up the cameras for the red light cameras when you blow through the red light cameras. You're pushing them up with a painter's pole. He got arrested, and he actually uncovered here on Long Island that they were shortening the yellow lights for revenue. So when people would go through the yellow lights, they get ticketed. But the county and, Suffolk County would shorten the yellow lights by 3 seconds. So Stephen found this out, and he went on a rampage, and he got arrested, and he put himself out there for the public. Now he's running for state senate,
wow.
New York State Senate District 2. He got his signatures, and he's officially on the ballot. And that's who you need in there, because the corruption here on Long Island is through the roof. Just so you guys know, Long Island, both Suffolk and Nassau, are the highest tax places in the nation. in the nation, but yet it is the most deplorable place ever. We have roads that are that of a third world country. We have heroin epidemic that is through the roof. The crime is climbing like nobody's business. You have to see it or live here to understand this place is a really bad place to live right now. The average property tax, the average on a quarter of an acre property is $10,000 a year.
Good God.
That's the average. Okay? Wow. And you're not getting anything for that. What are you getting? They say it's going to the schools. The schools don't even rank the top 10 in the state. So what are you getting for all this taxes? Then we have this guy, Ballone, right? I call him Baloney. He's the Suffolk County executive. I call him Steve Baloney. But he just even came out and he says, we have a $180 million deficit we got to fill. So now I'm going to raise red light camera fees, which he said were for safety, but obviously it was for revenue. And he's going to raise property taxes again. So people are running from here. They're running. They're trying to sell their homes and scramble to sell their homes for what they can get, and they're leaving. And I'm out there trying to fight the good fight, and it's a hard battle because I love my hometown. I mean, I've been from Queens to Long Island my whole life, and I love it here. I love growing up here.
So you talk about people selling their homes and not even getting anywhere near what they pay for, and you're making a profit out of it, and yet, you know, they want to raise
they're
your...
walking away. They ain't even trying to sell it. If they can't sell it, they're walking away from it, letting it go into foreclosure.
Yeah, I know, and then you're driving around empty, you know, abandoned houses too, right? But they can charge your plastic bags like 5 cents, right?
Right. That was the other thing, the plastic bags. This is the thing that killed me. Out of all the horrible things that are going on the island, let's charge everybody 5 cents for a plastic bag because we're worried about the environment. It's like, bro, you ain't even going to have an environment. You're not even going to have a job, and you're over here worried about plastic bags? Like, are you kidding me? We got heroin addicts. We have to triple lock the doors at night because there's home invasions. And the reason being, right, the heroin epidemic here is so severe. It's crazy. They went to, I don't know if they, you guys are in Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if you guys went to electronic prescriptions.
No.
It's not? Okay, well, here in Long Island, they went to electronic prescriptions. So now, if somebody says their arm hurts because the pain pill epidemic is huge. So if somebody says their arm hurts, they go to one doctor, and the doctor gives them a prescription. They say, oh, well, they go through that prescription in a day. They go to another doctor and try to get the same prescription. The other doctor now cannot do it because it's all electronic. They do electronic prescriptions only.
Yeah, no, it does not happen in Jersey yet, though, no. So, wow.
So now they go to another doctor, and the other doctor says, well, I can't give you the prescription because it's electronic, and it shows here on a computer that you just had a prescription filled, so I can't give you anymore. So now these people go to heroin. So now they go to heroin, and then when they run out of money, what do? They steal, home invasions, and the other. And that's what's going on here on the island. So it's bad. It's really bad. And our Suffolk County executives are worried about plastic bags over everything else. We have abandoned homes everywhere where vagrants are living in it. Your illegal immigration? Hoot. You have not driven through here. I can show you they're living homeless in the woods. There's homeless tent camps in the woods. And yet our Suffolk County executives are worried about plastic bags.
That's amazing. It just shows you where their priority is, their priorities are.
And, you know, you telling us this is like news to us because the way things get covered, it looks like it's all hunky-dory in Long Island. You know, we hear about the property taxes. But here, like, for example, you're telling this to us, and, you know, we've heard about the taxes, you guys being the highest, you know, taxed county and everything. But man, to hear all these things to us is like news to us, Peter.
Farmingville, Long Island. Homeless tent camps, Quorum, Long Island, homeless tent camps, all illegal immigrants, and even people that are here living in tents, like these tarps and everything else set up in the woods. I mean, they're eating wild dogs and deer. I'm not exaggerating when I tell you this.
Is it getting that brutal over there, Peter, that you might have to consider yourself possibly, although you have a home there, relocating?
Yes. I am actually thinking about relocating soon. I have to wait on a few things. There's something that's going to come out that's big.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it still hasn't come out yet? Because you've been teasing it, and I was wondering, oh, if it had come out already, but...
I can't talk about it because it's lawsuit involved.
Okay.
It's big, and when it hits the public, you're going to know. And you're like, oh, my God.
Wow.
Really? And yeah.
Fairly soon, you're still deciding on when it's going to be posted out?
It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the attorneys and who the lawsuit is going to. But
gotcha.
What it is it may not make it to public. It may. It all depends on them. I just have to keep quiet, and that's what I've been doing. But when I tell you that it's big, it's big.
I can just tell in the tone of your voice, you so badly want to let it out, too. You just can't wait for it to come out.
Smart.
I do. I want to let it out so bad, but I can't. I was told by attorneys to shut up.
All right. So before we wrap up here, Peter, and we're here joined by Peter Wolfinger here.
I talked to Pete all day, man.
Oh,
this is amazing.
Awesome. It's like three guys are shooting the breeze here.
We got to hit a bar pretty soon and just start shooting the breeze.
Oh, I will. Anytime you guys are ready, we'll do it.
We're just like surprised at the stuff that we're hearing about like Long Island, right? And also we're hearing about the suicides in Staten Island and Jersey, I mean, what do I have to like honestly be, you know, upset about in Jersey? But on a national level, before you head out, like, what is the message? You were talking about traditions, you were talking about, you know, the future of this country. What exactly, what message do you want to send out to everybody on your Facebook page, like, or here on this interview? What do you want to leave us with, like a message or something, you know, something that you want to inform us about?
Love everybody, and don't get offended by every little damn thing, and grow a set of balls. It's the truth. Just love everybody. You know what? Love everybody, regardless of race, religion, culture. Love them. And don't get offended by every little cum-ticking thing. Stop. Grow a set. Somebody picks on you, laugh about it. If somebody disagrees with you, laugh about it. Enjoy it, embrace it, take it as criticism. Take it, you know. Everybody's offended about everything lately, and it's garbage. And stick to the traditions of the country. I mean, come on, man. You know, have pride in the place you live. Have pride in where you're from. Have pride in your country. Stop it now. You know, stop. Respect, love, tradition. I can't say it any clearer than that, man. And stop being offended with every little thing. Stop it.
True words were never spoken, Pete. I mean, I want to take the time real quick. Just I know I've said it to you off air, but thank you so much for what you do, man. Everybody doesn't realize how much, like you said, grow a set, right? A lot of people are afraid nowadays, more than ever, I would like to assume, that to voice their opinions because they're afraid of how it's going to be dictated by other people. Everybody's so afraid of offending everybody. Everybody's always afraid of feeling like an outcast because they have a certain view because the majority thinks a certain way. And the thing
I got
that
something to make them feel a little more comfortable.
Exactly.
Think of it this way. Just think of it this way. Somebody doesn't like what you're saying. Just say to yourself, is that person going to be sitting down at my Thanksgiving table?
Exactly.
No. Screw them.
Definitely. But the thing I love the most about it, too, talking with you, Pete, is that the majority of the time, I think what's really failed more than anything is just communication. People just don't like to communicate with each other at all, right. No matter what. And my thing is, listen, you could think strongly about something, right, Pete? And I could completely disagree with you. And we can have a heated argument about it, whether it doesn't have to be about politics either. It could be about football teams. What fan are you of?
Me? I'm a Jets fan.
You're a Jeff fan, right?
Oh, perfect, Pete,
perfect.
I'm so sorry.
Jeff's a Jeff fan. I'm a Giant fan. We can go back and forth about you being the little brother and we being the big brother and Super Bowls and all that stuff, right? But at the end of the day, no matter what, I respect your opinion because you're willing to listen to me and be respectful of the fact that although I completely disagree with 100% what you said,
it's your right to think that way if you want to, and we can all be best friends, and then we're just chugging another round of beers.
That's great. And we're not going to ostracize you or put you to the corner and you know, and just totally shut down what you believe. No, because what I...
That's the era of... Where I come from, we can get into fist fights, full-blown-out fist fights, and then when we're done, we sit there, we hug one another, go sit down, and we crack open a couple of drinks, and we laugh about that shit. Win or lose, it doesn't matter. We laugh about it. That's how it is. That's life. Fuck, you know, screw it, man.
And more than that, it's just evolution. It's just, like, for example, say 10 years down the road, you start realizing, oh, Brian made a great point, which I would find irresponsible because I always make great points, but I'm joking. But, yeah, just that, because you had a chance to evolve in conversation. That's the only way we all learn and evolve is through conversation. Well,
just so you guys know, real quick before we go, I have a political group that says political views, hashtag Wolfinger 2016. I actually threw out a guy. I didn't even throw him out. He said to me, he was all pro-Trump, and he hated the leftists that were in the group, and he demanded, he called me spineless. You throw them out right now. You spineless, you know, you're a spineless admin. I wrote to him, I said, listen to me. You call me spineless, you're spineless. I said, it's very easy for you to go open up another group, and you can put everybody that's the same, all Trump. Tell me how that works out for you. I said, and tell me if that group is interesting. It's not as interesting as mine. I said, I'm not throwing anybody out. I don't agree with the leftists, but you know what? I want them in there. Because you know something? Once in a while, they have something that's worthwhile listening to. And I'm leaving them right where they are.
And we have no problem listening to, and we don't have a problem listening. Like, for example, you want to come on a platform and talk about your views. You know what? We're not going to judge you, or we're not going to criticize or, you know, or ostracize you or berate you. We're going to listen, and I don't think that's what we do anymore. We don't listen to each other's opinions. We don't. We're focused. We have tunnel vision on one thing, and that's how it is, and that's a huge problem.
And you know something too, Jeff? I've realized too, in blatantly having – I don't have many conversations with people, but with having them, they've already voiced an opinion on something that they don't even believe in. They've only developed that opinion or thought process from what they hear other people say.
Yeah.
And that's the worst opinion you can ever have, because there's no basis behind it. You don't really believe it yourself. You're just told that's what you should believe in.
You're right.
We left him speechless, Bri.
Oh my God.
We left the man speechless. Oh man,
Pete, it's been great talking to you, man. We would love to do it again soon down the road, not late down the road. We can't wait to see what you're planning and have been teasing us this entire show about. We can't wait for that to actually happen and see if it actually comes in the public eye.
It'll come. I have a feeling it's going to hit public. And when it does, you guys will know, and you'll see in the papers and be like, oh, wow.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I'll revert back to this episode and say, wow. We actually were in the midst of that time when it was actually evolving. But, Pete, any other projects or videos you plan on putting on Facebook besides this one that we should be looking out for?
Yes, I have a 2016 F That Guy video that's coming out.
I love your titles, by the way. I have to say that, too. Your titles are amazing.
The 2016 F That Guy video is coming out. I don't know if it'll be funny. I don't know if it'll be good. We'll see.
But it's coming out.
It's going to come out eventually, yeah. I'm putting it together.
All right, Peter. Listen, man, hopefully Jets have a good season. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And we'll definitely keep in touch and talk soon, man.
All right, you got it, man. Guys, enjoy your night.
Wow, man, what a great interview. Huge shout-out goes and special thanks goes out to Peter Wolfinger. You guys can catch him on Twitter at Peter Wolfinger. Just type him in. He's on Facebook, same thing.
And Instagram.
Just tremendous feedback from him. Such a down-to-earth guy. It was great to have him on the show. Jersey Wrecking Crew, Peter Wolfinger, great combination.
Probably going to team up again for another interview, too, maybe a little bit after the elections. And how about that? Yeah. I had no idea what was going on Long Island. I had no idea it was that bad over there. And for a guy that's been living there a long time and wanted to move out of there, really tells you something. But we just want to get you another perspective, another, you know, shine another light on how you look at things. And I said, you guys, I got to have a sense of humor how you look at stuff. You can't take everything too personal. You got to laugh, and you got to be stop with this political correctness, you know? You really got
to. Exactly. And the funny thing about, not funny, but the most interesting thing is that It's amazing the things you find out during just having general conversation with people. And he's a great conversationalist. Yep. And like you said, I can't wait to have him back, hopefully sooner or later. You guys have been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Shifting over to iTunes pretty soon. We'll put that on Twitter as well when that happens. And on our partnership with Brain Stew Radio Network at Brain Stew Radio. For me, Brian Berg of the Trendsetter, my tag team partner, Jeff Martin, we are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. And after listening to this episode, guys, first of all, you guys are exhausted, but your life is just too sweet.
Bazanji next week.